Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am your host, Susan Larison-Dans, and today we have a guest with us. Her name is Sue Elliott, and Sue is the founder and facilitator for a Portland, Oregon group called Christians with Questions. And today, given all that has been going on in the news in the past week, we have both felt the concept of evil weighing heavy on our hearts from multiple perspectives. Sue is going to talk about the Christian perspective, keeping in mind that both of us are people who honestly and authentically are not afraid to talk about our own questions. In my mindset, I now lean more towards a what would be called a New Age perspective, although keeping in mind that I'm also a New Ager or a person with questions. And I think one of the first things that it's important to acknowledge on our spiritual journey is that all of us at some point have questions, and that is normal. And I know that sometimes we try to present points of view that are beyond question, and there may be certain things that we feel very strongly about, but it's so important for us to not be afraid to talk honestly about our questions and also to talk about our unique perspectives so that we can understand one another better. Before I invite Sue to talk a little bit about her background, I'm going to give you the call-in number for today. You are welcome to call in. We will possibly take some callers, depending on how many we get. The call-in number is 1-310-807-5104. And there is also a chat room that is active right now. And I know I'm just kind of checking it here live. I know we have, yes, we do have some people in the chat, and I welcome you to the show. Sue and I are both in the chat. Although be aware, it's somewhat difficult to type and speak at the same time. So we will simply be, at times we may be able to type since we've got two of us here today. But I do welcome you here. And I also welcome all of you who are listening in the archives. I know this show is actually growing in listenership, and I'm very thankful for that because the purpose of this show is to share our unique perspectives and to increase understanding. And so I'm very gratified that people are listening in the archives, and I welcome you as well. So let me introduce Sue Elliott. Sue, welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear again. This is your second appearance here. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background and your perspective on this topic?
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me. I basically have been a Christian for 30 more years than I really want to admit to, and have always had a lot of questions. And in the longer you stay a Christian, usually the less resources there are for you to really talk about some of the deep doubts or questions that you might have. And sometimes I found that the responses were less than satisfying. And so I ended up starting a group of my own, a meetup.com group for people who wanted to sit and ask questions that they wouldn't be appreciated or accepted within the walls of a church. And the group has grown to about a membership of about 80 now, and has been really successful at giving people a forum to talk very openly about their spectrum of beliefs that occurs within the umbrella of the term Christianity. What we see in the public venues usually is one very small slice of what's really out there. And it's been a great opportunity for us to find out just how diverse our beliefs are, to talk about them without fear, without judgment, without trying to convince anyone. And it's just been really refreshing and satisfying.
So, Sue, would you say the people then participating in your group have a broad range of perspectives on Christianity? Do they range from very conservative to maybe more liberal views on Christianity and everywhere in between? Is that really what you're seeing, or are you seeing what characterize the group just a little bit more?
I would say that the majority of people tend to fall a little bit outside the sort of fundamentalist spectrum, but that's why they're there, you know, because usually people with extremely conservative beliefs don't have any problem finding lots of other people to talk to, and they can do that within the walls of their church. But for people who really want to explore other questions, they have to go somewhere else. And we do have some memberships of people who are very, very conservative in their beliefs, but they're also very fearless people, and they're not afraid to sit and talk about beliefs that they find frustrating or threatening. We try to keep it very intellectual so that it's not, you know, personalized. Why do you believe this way? What's wrong with you? You know, it's or I have to change you. I have to convince you. It's more, let's look at all that's out there, and people talk about what they're discovering and what their questions are, and we don't try to solve it. We just give ourselves more to think about.
You know, I will say that in my experience just within the New Age community, and I was raised very conservatively and, you know, really attempted to believe in evangelical concepts well into adulthood with lots of bouts of doubt in between. I mean, to be fair, doubt has certainly characterized a good portion of my life in terms of understanding conservative Christianity. So I guess it seems that you do get to the point, some people do get to the point where they're ready to honestly express their questions, although that is a very difficult thing to do, just because there certainly can be a culture, and it's not always. There are some conservative groups that want to hear questions, but you have to say that there is a culture of being afraid to question, or that opens the door. I mean, since we are going to be talking about evil, that opens the door to the very thing that we're talking about today. So, and as I talk, my dog is scratching at the door. The hound of hell is coming in, if anyone heard that. We are just regular people running this show from our homes. Actually, we like that. We are, you know, just wanting to be having an authentic conversation. So, my journey certainly... one of the biggest things I had trouble with was the concept of hell, which is related to the concept of evil. Now, I did go through many years of questioning and then had a crisis and asked to be shown the way, asked sincerely, I just want to know the way. Show me the way. And I think over time I'm finding that people find that way in many different ways. However, what came through for me was love. And so just, you know, looking at this past week in particular and thinking about, you know, what motivates people to do just really unthinkable acts, you know, it forces us to confront this concept of evil. And does evil exist in a personified way, or is it an illusion? And again, here, this is the New Age perspective, that evil is not really as powerful as I was taught in my Christian upbringing and through my adulthood when I was studying Christian concepts and is more a byproduct of fear and confusion. Often there's something that needs to be healed. And you have to look back at, you know, what is the original state of mankind? I mean, this really brings us to very fundamental questions. And, you know, whether we can even address this in the time of this show, we'll find out, because we could go, this is about the deepest, most challenging question on the planet, I feel. But I think it's really important for us to talk about it from different points of view. So, Sue, talk about, you know, where are you at right now in terms of your thought process with regards to evil? And also bring in, from your knowledge, you were very active, I know, within your Christian, within the conservative Christian community. I do, well, I'm having trouble with my dog here. She's growling. Uh-oh. Show on evil. She's growling and she wants to get out. Now she wanted in and out. Okay, so took care of the dog. Tell us, Sue, while I deal with my animal issues here, about your your perspectives from your background.
Maybe the dog
and where
wants to be
now.
Interviewed.
Yeah, I know. It's a bad show for her to be growling while she's standing next to me. But hey, what? You know what? It happened. I'm happy to tell everyone my dog was just growling just now as I was talking about evil. But she actually didn't want to be. She doesn't know where she wants to be, in the room or out. So go on, Sue.
Well, I, as you said, I was brought up to believe the standard Christian viewpoint, which is that evil is was brought into the world, I guess, originally by Satan, who was one of God's most beautiful angels, like the top angel, and he rebelled against God and led a host of followers, and they were thrown down to hell. I believe Satan was put in charge of the earth, which seemed like rather a hard thing for the rest of us. But and then there was, of course, the story of man choosing to disobey God and therefore, you know, becoming that was when death came into the world. So I'm not going to obviously go deep into that because most everybody knows the story. But the things that I tended to find myself questioning, well, one of them was a big one, which is, you know, the description that we're given of God as the Almighty, the All-Powerful, the All-Loving. You know, the obvious first question is, why would anybody rebel against that? And you think of Lucifer as being someone who had way more access to God than we do, way more knowledge of God. And if this is the case, how could you rebel against something like that or even want to? It was something I just found really, really hard to credit. You know, I tried sort of moving through the idea that, you know, Lucifer was a sort of kind of set to do that job, maybe, you know, because there needed to be a driving force behind us, pushing us towards God, towards the light, towards good. You know, all kinds of different philosophies running through my head that I'm trying to make sense of. I found one thing very attractive in the New Age belief was seeing evil, or, you know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but seeing evil as not so much a force in itself, but as in is simply a lack of light, a lack of love, that it was, you know, simply a deficit rather than a force in its own. And that, I like that. That sounds really good to me. it makes some sense. But then I find myself asking questions about, you know, places and times in my life where you've seen things or heard about things that seemed like they definitely had a force of their own or a personality of their own. And I'm just wondering how that fits in to a more New Age perspective on evil. I've heard them talk about low-level spirits, which sounds like what a Christian would call demons or demonic activity, and wondered, what's the relation there? What does that mean? Is that just someone who's too low in their experience to have developed any love or movement towards the light? Or, yeah, tell me about that. Can you tell me something about that?
First of all, I am not an expert in thinking about, you know, darker forces from a New Age perspective, because it's not something that I choose to focus upon. I actually do take the dictate that I learned from Christianity. Don't have the verse exactly, but maybe you can remember it, Sue, exactly. But, you know, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things, I can't remember again the exact verse.
Sure.
I have in front of me.
Whatever is
think on those
good,
things.
Whatever is
yeah.
noble, whatever is of good repute. Think on these things.
Right. However, I do have a perspective on this, because you can't be in total denial. I mean, there's not focusing, and there's being just total not paying attention at all. And one way of looking at it, and I have heard this said from other New Agers, so to speak, is that there is more to our reality than just what we see on the earth. And number one, this isn't the only planet in the universe. I know this gets into what some people call fringe perspectives, and yet, ironically, from a logical point of view, given the vastness of this universe and how many galaxies there are, and, you know, that there may even be multiple universes, and science is speculating on that right now, it would be the ultimate egotistical thing for mankind to say, well, Earth is it. This is the only planet in this giant universe that exists, and the only one that has life that would be intelligent. So if you open up the possibility of there being other planets with beings at different states of consciousness, and we don't know how they can communicate to us, that is one perspective I have heard within the New Age movement, is that, and it is not really fringe, it is not beyond logic. The other part, too, is that there is this whole other dimension, which some would call the spirit world, or, you know, a dimension beyond our human reality. Some people talk of ghosts or energies, that ghosts may not really be personified, that they're just energy. Others would say that, you know, they're stuck between worlds. I'm not going to take a perspective on that, because I'm still trying to figure that all out. But from my point of view, I'm willing to acknowledge that there is confusion on this planet. I mean, we can see that. There are things that happen on this planet that are obviously not all of the light, I'm not saying those things are pure evil, and we'll get into that, but what I'm saying here is, it would, to me, be intellectually dishonest even to say that there couldn't be other influences out there that can communicate in other ways that are not fully anchored in love, not fully conscious of love. And to me, that's what's so important, is that as you move out of your own darkness, I mean, everybody has been on a journey, and I know I see with myself how I'm becoming a much more giving person, more involved in my community over time, different things like that. As you become more conscious of how to act in unconditional love, that darkness fades away. And so
I think that comes as a natural consequence of feeling more connected. You know, that it seems like the more you start to realize that you're not just an island in the middle of the universe, that you are a vital part of not just your family, but your community, not just your community, but your city, your country, and the world, and even on from there, you do tend to start reacting in more of those ways, don't you find?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I know certainly happens within Christianity is the entire conversion experience, where people feel that their life truly has been transformed, and they have their testimonies where they talk about how they changed their lives and how they're now people of service, you know, assisting others, and how this focus on the love of God has transformed them. And I have to say that because I had so many doubts within my own time trying to believe in very, you know, biblical inerrancy and very conservative Christian concepts, that never really came out for me until I became more of a New Ager, which is, and I'm not denying Christians that experience. I know it happens for them. I've heard the testimonies. I've seen and known wonderful, loving Christians. I have them in my life. And I've seen people who are, you know, still not real conscious of love in multiple belief systems, including Christianity. So I guess what I'm saying, though, is that this is available to all of us, which I know is something that goes against those who claim that, you know, the biblically inerrant going, you know, that Christianity is the only way to reach this higher level of transformation, is what it really is. A conversion is a transformation. And the New Age term that you would use for that is transformation versus conversion. But it's essentially the same thing. And over time, I see more and more the same concepts not only being expressed, but occurring with very real testimonies and evidence within people's lives within multiple worldviews. So I'll let
yeah,
you
it'd be interesting
respond.
To do some kind of survey or whatever, you know, comparing the, you know, without talking about beliefs or theologies, but just talk about the experience that people have when they have a conversion experience versus those who have a transformational experience, if there's really any difference between them. I mean, I know for myself, my conversion experience, I would have called the ultimate experience of connection, you know, the point at which something was inside me opens up and touches God, basically, and suddenly there's a connection there that wasn't there before. And because of that, then I start feeling connected to everyone around me who has also experienced that connection. There's a special bond between us. And I guess where I would completely agree with you is that in my personal experience of talking to people outside the Christian church who've had these experiences as well, that I do not have a sense of difference with what they experience, if that makes any sense. I listen to them talk. I have my own sense of connection with them, and it feels the same. It does not feel the same as when I've talked to people whom I've, which doesn't happen too often, but has happened, where I felt like there was some sense of evil around them. And so, you know, a lot of my questions about the exclusivity of Christianity is about that very thing. How can something that appears to be of the same spirit be of two completely opposing forces? How can, you know, C.S. Lewis expressed it so wonderfully in the Chronicles of Narnia, where he sets up, and since that's coming out as a movie, a lot of people may be a bit more familiar with the storyline, you know, that Aslan is the great lion who represents Christ, and in the story there's a false god called Tash that a whole other country worships this god Tash, and at one point one of the followers of Tash meets Aslan and begins to talk to him, and Aslan welcomes him as one of his own, and the man says, well, how can that be, since I have worshipped Tash since my birth? And Aslan says, he says, is it because you and Tash are the same as everyone's told me? And Aslan said, no, it's not. It's because we're opposites. You can't do anything good for Tash, the god of evil. You cannot do anything that you have done that is born out of love and the light and everything. I have accepted that you've done it for me. And to me, that speaks of this very deep sense that there are not multiple gods out there. You know, there is anyone who's had a sense of the divine or of God, it sounds to me like the very basic things they're describing are the same qualities. The things that they argue about are more surface things, like the rules and regulations of what's right and what's wrong. They're more surface things. How you express your sexuality, you know, that kind of thing, versus the deeper things of loving your neighbor, treating someone as you would want to be treated. These very much more fundamental things are common across all these belief systems. And yet I was taught that anyone who didn't consciously subscribe to a strictly Christian point of view was worshiping, even though they thought they might be worshiping God, they were really worshiping the devil. And that just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, I can speak through my own experience of seeking God, our Creator, however you want to label it, and my dog is scratching at the door again, but I'm not talking about an evil thing right now. So the thing is that if you have a sincere heart in search of your Creator, and you open yourself up to the truth without limiting yourself to a particular point of view, but just saying, you know, show me the way. I mean, that was certainly the way that I, you should be able to do that, number one, because there are some who will say, oh, well, when you do that, if you put your Bible down, you just opened yourself up to the devil. And there is that concept of counterfeit love, counterfeit truth, things that seem true and mm-hmm. you know, seem so loving, seem so wonderful, and yet they're counterfeit. But the problem I have with this, and I've posted about this a lot on the Oprah discussion forum, my pseudonym over there is Bridge Builder, and we've had a lot of discussion. In fact, I've posted there. I started out on some Christian forums where we talked about these concepts. Is the problem I have is the deception that is being described is so very deep and so very intense that it's the decks are totally stacked against those who are sincerely wanting to find the truth and wanting to find their Creator. And yet, you know, someone like me, and maybe, you know, since you're now entertaining some New Age ideas, you know, without necessarily embracing all, but, you know, you're thinking about them, it could be said about us that we are being misled. And I'm sure there are people close to us who would certainly say that, you know, in a loving way. Sometimes, you know, the community in Christianity doesn't say that in a loving way. But the people who are at the highest place in terms of wanting to be loving towards others will lovingly, in fact, they'll say this, you know, I'm telling you this out of love. You are being mm-hmm. misled. But the thing is that if you open the door to the concept of supernatural deceivers running amok in the universe, well then, you had better be very careful about what you choose to believe. And that's when scrutinizing things like, you know, the tortures of a fiery hell, those who believe in a fiery hell, they need to be scrutinized. I'm not saying that's supernatural deception, because I don't believe that. But I believe that you have to look at these through conscience. You can't just say, well, it says that, I have to believe it, you know, blind faith, that's just the way it is. If you truly want to be careful about what you believe. And so for me, the experience of God, you know, when I asked to be shown the way, was one of communion and pure love. I have had some powerful spiritual experiences in my life, And, you know, it's not every moment of the day. It's not all the time. When you have one of those experiences, I mean, a New Ager would call it, this is a one with the universe experience. And they often will describe this feeling of absolute transcendent unconditional love that it's almost impossible to believe could be faked. And to be honest, if you start saying, well, this can be faked, then, you know, it could be faked anywhere. You know, if it's given to you with a bitter pill of fear, you know, yes, there's this love, but if you don't do this, this, and if you don't believe this way, you know, here's what the consequence is. That, to me, is what doesn't sound right. You know, my conscience says, now, wait a second. How could God ever give up on anyone? Why is there a deadline? You know, why are you only given this one life to figure it out? And to top it off, how come Satan was so very powerful to force God's hand in such a way? I mean, even the very fundamentals of the faith, I have a really hard time with this. And I think some of the most difficult things for those I have spoken with to understand is that I am a defender of our Creator and God. I mean, I do this because I love our Creator and learn to love our Creator more every day, in the sense that I can't imagine anything being so powerful to be able to do all the things that have been done. And the other thing, which I think is a tough thing to acknowledge, is that you have to accept in any worldview that our Creator has allowed this to happen. And that's another whole topic we can talk about free choice. I think we'll get into that. And, you know, as far as writing about these perspectives, that's actually something I've been working on in my book, The Frontier Beyond Fear, the same as this show. It's not out yet, and it's going to take a while for it to be out because it's about my journey, which is continuing, and I'm not ready to put it out yet. But one of the things I am seeing is, having walked, just my personal experience, walking on some of these different paths, seeing the commonalities, and not only the commonalities of what is it like to be a person of faith on one of these paths, and how it's so similar, and how we're, you know, you have this faith-based view of where the world is going that is not a dark place ultimately. It's a very good thing, and it's active in your life. And then also, there are also the pitfalls of different systems, how different ones can fall into fear. And I have seen that in multiple places. You know, I've seen it in the New Age. I see people fall into fear there often. I also see it in other belief systems. So there, this can happen, this experience, these experiences can happen in multiple ways, and not just an experience of love, but also how fear can, in my opinion, skew that perception of the unconditional love that is out there.
Yeah, you used the term, one of my favorite terms, when you talked about stacking the deck. You know, kind of one of my core beliefs that I pull out whenever I start getting fearful is the idea that I do not believe that God stacks the deck against us, you know, that God is out there saying, well, the truth is this very, very specific, hard-to-intuit thing. And every person has to find it. There is a devil out there prowling around trying to make sure that he chases everyone off from it some way or the other, and that humans, being very limited in their understanding, could so easily get it wrong, but that's too bad. If they don't get it just right, you know, it's the fiery hell. And this Satan person who supposedly God is transcendent over wins the day for most of the souls in the universe, and just these very few hang in there and make it through. That speaks of the character of a God whom I would not worship. And that's the thing that I always find so funny about people who call themselves atheists. Usually it's not the idea of God that they're standing against. It's it's the description of a particular kind of God that they're saying they can't believe in. And a lot of times if they describe that God, then it's someone that I would say, well, yeah, I wouldn't believe in that either. The question that makes it so difficult for us is that if you do what we've done, which is to say, okay, I'm no longer going to let one specific tradition or writing limit me in my understanding of God. I'm going to, you know, take the wisdom of what other people have learned, but I'm going to add to it my own experience and the experiences of other wisdom traditions, and most of all, I'm going to devote myself to God within myself and say, teach me. I only want to know the truth. To know that that request is going to be honored, and to trust that, you know, if God is as supreme as he or she is described to be, then the God is perfectly capable of walking us through this thing. And that if there are going to be places where we get derailed, where we don't understand, that they're not going to lead us to ultimate destruction. They're simply going to be mistakes that we make that are going to be part of our learning process. And that therefore we can walk this path without being afraid. We can talk to people we don't agree with without being afraid. We can ask dangerous questions without being afraid. I think the biggest fear is the one you described, which is the idea that we do know there's so much we don't understand, and that so something that we think, you know, is the character of God, we could be wrong about, and that's such a terribly fearful thing. And so to me, that's been the hardest hurdle, is knowing that I'm saying, because certain things don't make sense to me in the Bible, I'm going to step away from the Bible being my God, and I'm going to make the Bible simply the Word of God brought through men that may have errancies, that may have filtering through the cultures of the people who wrote it, and I'm going to allow that to color how I read the Bible, and I'm going to be open to other things. That's a really frightening prospect, but what's the result for me? The result is I have to press in even harder towards God and towards asking for the truth, asking to be led in wisdom and in compassion and in trust, the trust that God would not allow me to be destroyed by my honest search for God. And that makes it a little safer to go ahead and ask. But it is a big step of trust.
Well, and it's a step of faith. I mean, you're really exhibiting your faith by showing that you have enough faith and trust in your Creator that if you sincerely seek guidance, that you will not be misled. And that, as you say, if you stumble in some way, that's all part of the plan, so to speak. That's all part of the learning experience. And actually, that helps us to stumble into how I view the concept of evil on this planet, is that, you know, and it is not an easy question. I mean, you look at this planet and what goes on and the violence and, I mean, some very horrible things, and it's almost impossible not to ask why. You know, I mean, that's the fundamental question that people will often ask if they're going through a personal hardship. And, I mean, even, you know, just observing what's going on in the world. And the only way I've ever been able to make sense of that, and I'm on a journey too. I mean, I deal with this question daily. Just this morning, I had mentioned to Sue before the show, it turns out we were both thinking about this, the topic of this show, independently, which is interesting. It's obvious we were really supposed to talk about this here today. But I was pondering it this morning. Yes, growling dogs aside, she's calmed down now. So, it is a difficult question, because you have to think that there is, you know, if you choose to believe in a creator, whether you believe that you are a part of that, you know, being omnipresent, which is a New Age point of view in that, although it can be considered a Christian point of view too, depending on how you characterize it, that God is everywhere. And if God is everywhere, that includes within you. And within the Christian community, sometimes that is expressed as the body of Christ. You know, it's exclusive to that group. And yet the same concept, it exists in both communities, just in different ways. And I know some who are listening to this are saying, yes, it does. And one of them is Satan's deception, you know. And I get that. I do understand why people see it that way, and I acknowledge that. I know people do have that point of view out there. However, expressing where I'm coming from here is that no matter what your view of the universe, you must come to terms with why bad things happen on this planet, even for Christianity. You know, why was Satan allowed to take control of this planet, you know, within that world view? And there has to be some reason, you know, why are these, you know, why is there all this violence? And the only conclusion that I continually feel guided to, which is also in Christianity, is this concept of free choice. We are not robots. We are souls on a journey. Now, from a New Age perspective, we are souls on a journey, which means I believe in multiple incarnations. I do. I have seen evidence of that, that people have. I mean, there's just so much out there on that, and that is my own belief system, bringing in a New Age element there. I don't believe this is just one life, and that's it, and then eternity, you know, in heaven or wherever, in hell, heaven, or wherever you choose to go. I believe that's a simplistic view of existence, that it makes sense to me that we would live multiple times on a journey, and it is through the darkness, and I'm not the first to express this, not by a long shot, but it is through the darkness, which is an absence of light, that we see the light. And I don't believe in total darkness either. I believe there is always light in every single situation. In the worst possible things that have occurred on this planet, there is light. And, you know, it's similar to how Christians believe all things work together for good for those who love God. Well, you know, that is a global perspective. And it is all part of the journey. And in having gone through what is a very difficult experience on this planet, a challenging experience, we will ultimately elevate and radiate that light of God even more. And, you know, even saying that, and I know I have faith in that, I still question, though. You know, sometimes I say, but wait a second. Wait a second. Are you saying the ends justifies the means? Why? Why did we make it so harsh? I mean, I'm not going to go into the horrible things that happen on this planet, but you know what goes on, you know, things, and things we can't even often conceive of in sometimes our sheltered worlds. And so, you know, I feel it's fine for me to question, you know, did we go too far? You know, and the only way that I can also come to terms with it is this idea, and this is a New Age perspective, that we participated as souls in the decision as to be here at a higher level. Nobody forced us to be on this planet of contrast, of light and dark, that we participated at a higher level. And to me, that helps a little bit, except the only problem with that is then do you become a puppet of what people call your higher self, you know, this higher soul? Yeah. Are you then, you know, like this marionette in this horrible world while there's some, you know, and so sometimes that can be difficult to see. But again, we see through a glass darkly. I do believe that. I believe that that transcends belief systems, this concept of not seeing everything, and that that's part of it all on this planet. So anyway, I'll let you
respond. Well, I think one,
one
part of the equation that kind of tones things down just a little bit is the what I would consider overemphasis that we put on death. We if you were able to step outside and say that death, to say that death is not the end of our existence, whether it's reincarnation, as you say, or whether it's heaven, or whether it's something else entirely, if death was not the end of our existence, why is death such a big deal? A lot of the emphasis that we put on the bad things that happen in the world come from a core concept that death is the worst thing that can happen to someone. And so that does indeed make the world a really, really horrible place. But if death is simply a fairly unpleasant transition to something entirely new, the next step in our development, it's not that big a deal. And so, yes, we have grief over death. We have grief over people that we love dying. But it's just not that important. In fact, that's kind of one of my backhanded ways of realizing that God's not that death may not be such a big deal, is the fact that God does so little to protect us from it.
yeah.
And that's kind of a joke, but at the same time,
no, it's not really.
It's kind of not. Let's take that out of the equation. Let's take out acts of God, earthquakes, tsunamis, and let's just say that they're all just moving people on to their next stage of development. Then what does that pull us down to? That pulls us down to, in most cases, the miserable process that people might go through on their way to dying. And something that I think is far more serious, which is the acts of cruelty that we perform on each other. And so people don't blame God usually because they got mugged. That's something people choose to do, like you said, an act of free will. And all these cruel acts, everything from getting mugged to, the tortures of the Inquisition, are all born of the free will of people choosing to treat each other as though they were not connected. And I find it interesting that the idea of connection is growing in our society as time goes on. The idea of a global community, the idea that we cannot go on exploiting people from other countries as though their welfare meant nothing to us. The Western corporations went into Somalia and took the resources and paid a tiny fraction of what they were worth to the people that were there, and then are really, really upset that now all these Somali pirates are out there, doing their piracy in the seaways, and that their own people, some of their own people, tend to regard them as heroes because they're getting back for them some of the things that they feel that they've been robbed of by Western corporations. Now, I'm not going to say that's the only point of view on that, because obviously it's not, and I'm not defending Somali piracy by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying that it's this really clear illustration of the fact that you cannot treat people in the world as though we were not connected to each other, and that you can exploit one segment of the population and think that it won't come back to bite you at some point. Our insurance rates are as high as they are because of the way that people will take advantage of insurance scams and that sort of thing. All this stuff does come back around. We're becoming aware of it, and we're becoming aware of it on a global standard. And the whole ecology movement has a lot to do with that, too, the fact that we've realized we're connected to the earth. We're not... I don't want to blame this on religious thought, but there definitely was a segment of religious thought that kind of said that because we are sort of superior, we're not animals at all, we're, because we have these immortal souls, we're not connected to this planet, and anything that we do to it is simply our right by divine providence, and we don't have to be concerned with what kind of toll that takes. And we've learned now that that's ridiculous, and that we are a part of it, that we're dependent on it, and that we have to keep that in mind when we decide how to exercise our dominance over it. So to me, that answers that puts some perspective on this question of why there is suffering and why bad things happen, in simply that we've been given a whole planet into which, as a huge classroom in which to learn these kind of lessons, and that protecting us from the consequences of it wouldn't teach us anything. I have a choir director. I used to direct choirs a long time ago, and when I was in high school, I would arrange music for choirs. And my choir director in high school would take almost any arrangement that I did, and he would look at it, and he might say, you know, this is not going to work because of this and such a reason. But he knew that I would never believe him until he actually gave it to the choir and he let them sing it. And then he knew that at some point I would come to him and say, you know what, this isn't working. Show me how to do it better. He knew instinctively that that was the best way to teach me, because I'm kind of stubborn and I have to see the consequences of what I do before I will accept that it's not going to work. Is it possible that this could happen on a world scale?
Yeah, I mean, if you view everything that occurs as a global learning experience, which is one that transcends, you know, goes on for centuries, I agree that that is one way of that is a very important way of coming to terms with this. And, you know, one of the things I've pondered is how many of the conflicts that we're involved in now, or things that have resulted in genocide in the world, are based on seemingly endless cycles of vengeance. You know, what happens is someone you love is tortured and killed, and then, you know, of course, you know, that culture reacts, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And yes, there can often be ideological wrappers around this, but, you know, what if it comes down to the concept of forgiveness, a very fundamental tenet of Christianity and what Jesus actually said? Because if you can be wronged, so to speak, because someone is in this lower level, I mean, not to diminish them, but is in a level of consciousness where they're reacting in fear, they're reacting in pain, not just fear, but pain. You know, something's occurred. I mean, you look at these conflicts going on now, if you look at both sides, like the Middle Eastern conflicts and things, I mean, there is a reaction on both sides of, you know, protecting what they have, protecting their loved ones. You know, even love plays into it, you know, protecting those people that you love, and having these, you know, endless cycles of violent experiences where those you love have been hurt. And it also, you know, the whole drive for basic survival, I mean, that fits into it too. I mean, it's very, it's a very complex equation, but what if we were to discover, and guess what? We're not the ones who discovered this to begin with, that forgiveness is what transcends it all and breaks the cycle. And also, you have to be in that place where you're not afraid, because if you are constantly afraid as a culture or as a person, you are going to react. You are going to react, and you're going to react in a way that is not anchored in love, is not anchored in forgiveness, most likely. You're going to react in a way that somewhere along the line you will probably regret. And therein is the lesson, you know, the lesson of you know, here's what happens when we react in fear, and maybe the entire history of the human race as we know it has been one lesson about how what happens when we react in fear after another. And I think one of the things I was questioning this morning, too, is what about the people who are amoral, not immoral, but amoral, you know, looking at the shooting that occurred where someone was clearly having problems that, you know, required healing. And yet, as a society, because something bad, really, you know, violent occurred, the reaction is to seek retribution, to seek punishment, to seek vengeance. What about looking at, hey, you know, here's someone who was amoral and didn't really understand what the heck was going on. When do we begin to seek to heal these people that and have the trust that people can be healed? And I'm not saying that necessarily the medical establishment has all the answers to that either. That has its pitfalls too. But, you know, it comes down to in some segments of society, actually not just some, in all segments, every one of us is in need of healing to one degree or another. And I believe that as we evolve, which I, that again, New Age concept, you know, we are evolving, but it is a guided evolution, not random, and not, even the evolution defenders who, you know, are strictly without, atheistic evolution defenders will say it's not random either, that it's, you know, it's guided in a different way. But I'm talking about a supernaturally guided evolution where what we think of as supernatural is actually the natural, we just don't understand it. But that we are getting to the point where as a human race, we will have access to that healing in many ways. And that includes genuinely assisting in situations where someone is so very troubled, having such, you know, significant issues, even with a physical cause in some cases, that too can be healed such that, mm-hmm. you know, senseless acts won't occur. And so my faith comes in there too, but it really does bother me when we have this attitude. You know, they say that the prisons are filled with people who did things without really knowing what the heck they did. And so I find that really offensive in an ethical society, in an ethical, compassionate society, that is our view of justice. And, you know, again, where do we incorporate this concept of healing, of restoration, of rehabilitation, you know, when it comes to justice? And yes, our spiritual points of view do have an influence on this, because if you believe in punitive justice from God, well, then that's going to trickle down to the kind of justice system that you implement for men. And so I'd be curious how you would respond to that. Now, we are reaching, I guess we're just at the hour, and since we're still having a good conversation, I guess we'll continue to talk for a little while. But we'll be ready to draw the show to a close as appropriate. But I'll let you go ahead and respond to that.
Which part did you want me to?
Well,
I'm not sure which part.
I think we're raising so many issues. What do you think about the concept of healing and also the concept of punitive, the concept of forgiveness and how do we raise our consciousness, in a sense, and also emphasizing the Christian viewpoint of this, how do we learn to treat our fellow mankind in a way that is anchored in forgiveness?
Yeah, my brain goes off in so many directions at that point that it's like, oh, I could go this way or this way or this way, and not even sure which one would be the most responsive to your question, but I did put something in the chat room here. It was a Radiolab podcast that I listened to a couple weeks ago that just blew my mind. As they talked about scientific experiments they had made in the realm of the an unsolvable moral problem, and I don't want to get too deep into it. Just follow the link if you want to put it in the show notes. But what came out of it was this concept that after doing experience with computers and things, not with people, but with computers, they found that there appears to be, it appears to be built into our universe that cooperation is rewarded. And I found that absolutely fascinating. And if you want to learn more about that, just check out the show on Radiolab. Because I'm always impressed by things that appear to be a part of the way the universe was created, because obviously that's going to reflect the heart of God. And but as far as how we as a culture find a way to work through some of these things, several things come to mind. One is perspective, and that is awfully difficult. I wrote a blog post the other day that I'll read just a teeny bit of that expresses this. It says, most people did not blame God for the acts of 9/11. Lots of them did blame God for the shift in plate tectonics that caused the Indonesian tsunami in 2004. So the assumption there is that God controls everything except the actions of human beings and bears. I mean, if somebody gets eaten by a bear, it's not really God's fault. It's not even the bear's fault. It's just a hungry bear doing what a bear's got to do. Unless it was your child being eaten by a bear, in which case it's God's fault again. Kind of a joke. What's interesting is that according to Dr. William Schlesinger, plate tectonics is absolutely essential to maintaining a stable climate condition on Earth. Otherwise, all the carbon dioxide would disappear and the planet would turn into a frozen ball. So if we didn't have earthquakes, we wouldn't be able to live here at all. So what's really pissing us off is that God set up a self-correcting ecosystem in which we could exist and then doesn't interfere with the system to save individual lives. Come to think of it, the very existence of a self-correcting system implies that its creator does not intend to control every single step. So the question then becomes not why didn't God intervene in some cases, but why does God intervene in some cases? It's the inconsistency that tends to bother us, and I'm not worried about that, but the question of perspective is it's really easy to see a wildfire as being a self-correcting way that forests maintain themselves until your house gets burned down, and then it's God punishing you. So the question is there a way that we can look at our lives here on Earth, at the bad things and the good things that happen to us from a higher perspective that says, well, for one thing, it's not personal. God is not saying, well, I don't like you, so I'll let you die in a tsunami. But I like this other person better, so I'm going to make sure they survive. And I don't want to, you know, the trouble with this viewpoint is it sort of marginalizes anyone who has come through this tsunami with an amazing tale of miraculous intervention. And I don't think I'm really ready to go there either, to say that, well, that wasn't God, that was just chance. But I guess what it is an invitation for us to stop thinking of death as being God's statement on the worth of our lives and of ourselves. And it's true that the only way that you can do that is by a faith that there's something beyond death for us. But since, you know, both you and I have that faith, you know, we're able to access this perspective. But if we can have a larger story that we're a part of, I think it does make it easier to look at these things in a calmer way. But as far as raising our consciousness, I still don't really understand that term as well as I would like to. I don't know how you do that.
Well, I think that by being in communion, opening yourself to being in communion with your Creator, however you perceive your Creator to be, you're already raising your consciousness, but there is the,
oh, good.
yes, there is this perception within the New Age community that something I do believe in, that, again, that there are quantum leaps in evolution, this guided evolution, that we're not just stuck at a level forever, and that we are entering a new level where being aware of the impact of your actions, being aware of your oneness with your fellow mankind, and being aware of your oneness with God will, in essence, raise your consciousness. I mean, that is what it means, to raise your consciousness, because you're one with everyone. And so suddenly you begin to see their perspective. I mean, in the, what I, you know, the more magical sides of the New Age community. I mean, there are people who talk about telepathy. I'm willing to entertain that. I mean, everyone can say, talk of an experience where maybe you were thinking about a friend and then they called you, that kind of thing. Today, mm-hmm. you and I were thinking about the same topic for this show. And so the question becomes, before we ever even talked about it, we were thinking about the same topic for this show. The question becomes, and again, that may just be because that's really high in our consciousness right now, given what's been going on this week. But in any case, telepathy, you know, what if we did become more aware of each other's feelings, even each other's thoughts? Suddenly you would see a whole different perspective as to why another culture may feel wronged in some way, why they're suffering and maybe reacting in a war. I wanted to read something, and when I read it, before I read it, I want to say that I listen to many sources out in the spiritual community, Christian and New Age, and this particular source was very popular a couple years ago when Oprah did her big New Earth webcast, and I wasn't even really looking for it because there's no index in this. I was kind of looking, but I was just curious what Eckhart Tolle had to say on this. And again, I do not view this as my Bible. Often New Agers are viewed that way, like, oh, you know, the New Earth, that's their Bible. No, in fact, if anything, I don't have a 100% true source right now. You know, I can't point to any one book and say, oh, everything in that book is true. The way I look at it, and this includes the Bible, is I look for truth in many sources. And there are sometimes I think a source may not resonate with me, and, you know, I think, you know, that just doesn't make sense. I'm not sure that's it. And that's fine. I don't just go throw the book out because there's something in there that I find I don't agree with. Otherwise, I wouldn't be reading any books. Because, you know, it's pretty hard for me to find a 100% true book. But I just wanted to read this because it was very applicable to what we're talking about, both evil, consciousness, and forgiveness. It's applicable to all of it. And again, this is Eckhart Tolle from A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. It doesn't really matter what proportion of your pain body belongs to your nation or race or what proportion is personal. He talks about just... get first, but he talks about this concept of a pain body where we hold on to our pain. Going back to quoting Tolle, in either case, you can only go beyond it by taking responsibility for your inner state now. Even if blame seems more than justified, as long as you blame others, you keep feeding the pain body with your thoughts and remain trapped in your ego. There is only one perpetrator of evil on the planet, human unconsciousness. That realization is true forgiveness. With forgiveness, your victim identity dissolves and your true power emerges, the power of presence with a capital P. Instead of blaming the darkness, you bring in the light. So that again is quoting Tolle from A New Earth, and it may explain why did so many of us listen to that broadcast? And I will tell you, there were things in that broadcast I actually disagreed with and openly posted about on the Oprah forum at the time. One of the things that Tolle talks about is releasing all the things that identify yourself as that's ego. I personally have a softer view of that. I think that you can be one with one another without you totally disappearing. I mean, I think that kind of violates why we're on the planet as uniquely created people. And so that was something, just to be clear, and see, that's another, such a misconception about those in the New Age community is that we just, you know, we've got some doctrine that we just quote, and, you know, that's our belief, and that's it, and we don't question. Well, no, not in the least. I mean, we think about these things as much as anyone, but I find it
Can
really
you read again can you read again that sentence that starts with, there is no evil but? I'd like to explore that.
There is only one perpetrator of evil on the planet, human unconsciousness. And what he's saying,
that's very a very strong statement as to what mm-hmm. this particular blog radio show is about today, that I'd love to poke around a little bit. So if that's true, well, can you think of exceptions to that? Are there sources of evil out there that aren't due to human unconsciousness?
Well, keep in mind that unconsciousness means that you are not aware of your creator. When you are unconscious, you do not have a conscious awareness of God. I mean, that's really the definition there. And as I say that, my phone goes off. So we're being called to awareness.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So if evil is perpetrated by basically the acts of unconscious men who are not connected to God, and or at least in a state where they're not, because obviously people who are connected to God can still perpetrate evil. In fact, seems like a lot of them are, you know, really going at times. Then we're talking about kind of the state of where you're at. For instance, you know, the guys in the Inquisition, well, that were burning heretics at the stake, they had a reason for it that they thought was spiritual. In fact, I had heard that they honestly thought they were doing a favor for the person they were burning by burning the sin out of them. Not my idea of doing them a favor, but that they actually had a rationale for it that was supposed to be, in some weird sense, benevolent. But you could say that they actually were not connected to God at that time, or God would have told them a deeper truth that although, you know, you may have to go through a very severe process to get the evil out of the person, you can't do it for someone else. You know, each person has to go through that process themselves, not inflict it on each other. And so I can run through that reasoning to say that, well, maybe this is true what Eckhart Tolle is saying. So then I'm trying to say, can I think of any examples of evil in the world that weren't due to people? You know, because obviously we don't regard acts of nature as evil, but sometimes we see sort of things, I would say, sort of paranormal, supernatural stories that people have heard that we would call evil, people who become demonically possessed. And some of them, it does seem to be outside their own will. I'm just talking out loud here, trying to think, can I think of any examples that would disprove that hypothesis? Otherwise, I would be tempted to accept it.
Well, I will say, you know, just my own evaluation of this from my perspective, what does being unconscious can mean multiple things. You know, if you're someone who has no idea what you're doing for whatever reason, I mean, we'll talk about demonic possession in a minute here, but and that's a big topic to bring up at the end of the show.
Yeah, I don't think we can get through that.
Because we probably
minutes.
Won't get through that in this one. However, and whether people believe that's what's going on and so forth. But
yeah, exactly.
The thing is that part of being unconscious could also be you are in a state where you have no clue what the heck you're doing. You know, maybe you're mentally ill, whatever has caused that. You're on drugs. You are in this current state where you don't know what the heck you're doing, and then you do something evil. And so you're not conscious of that. And so one of the things I think about here is, again, this concept of healing, because this is what I was struggling with this morning is that if you're in this state where you don't know what the heck you're doing, the only way that a person's consciousness can be raised in that state, you know, let's say you're Charles Manson or someone like that, you know, or the people who follow, I mean, they just, they had no clue what that, I mean, maybe some of them did. I mean, it's debatable. I'm not going to get into the individual cases. But, you know, there are cases where we have determined that someone just doesn't know what the heck they're doing. What is that, you know, and why?
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, the why of that, the only way I can look at that is that, you know, we are in an imperfect state on this planet, in the sense that we are still evolving as a species and that there are things that need to be healed. So that's sort of the why for me. And then also these things also may, they have bigger lessons in them that we can't even begin to fully understand. And that's another reason for why. But, you know, being unconscious can mean many things. I mean, it can mean, you know, clinging to a particular belief that isn't anchored in the love of God. You know, what is the love of God? You know, that becomes a big question, too. Now, I would say it's unconditional love. So others would say there really are conditions on it. I mean, within Christianity, certainly there can be conditions ultimately as to whether you get to experience that love or not. If you do believe in the heaven-hell version, even if you're told that you're loved all the way up until the point that you've made your decision, you know, at some point you're exempt. Some people are, or they're apart from it. So to me, again, I'm rambling now. This show is all about just expressing our authentic thoughts. Again, it has to do with, for me, are you conscious of love? I mean, let's talk about love and what is love, and are you conscious of that in everything you do? Are you conscious of being loved? That's part of it. Many wounded people in the world who have had, you know, horrible upbringings, and then they end up doing things that, you know, because of their upbringings that were so horrible, they
mm-hmm.
may not have been as conscious of being loved as the rest of us, some of us who have had more sheltered upbringings. And, you know, it becomes down to how do we become exposed to not only being loved, but also realizing that what we want most to do in the world, in every moment that we can be in control. And you and I both know we have moments where we don't do this, even though we know we want to, is expressing love for our fellow human beings, you know, where we don't express that anger that comes up in the moment or whatever. And, you know, then forgiveness comes in too. We have to be forgiving of society and ourselves. You know, and we're not earning our way to heaven. I don't know how many times I've heard that one on the Oprah Forum, you know, that you think you're earning your way to heaven. Well, you know, to a New Ager, heaven is not some final destination after death. We believe in reincarnation, many of us. Heaven is a state of mind. Heaven is a state of the planet, too,
mm-hmm.
Which certainly Christians believe in heaven on earth as a concept. So, and to me, heaven is someplace you can live moment by moment, second by second, and, you know, I may not be in that space of love right this minute, but you know what, I can shift that, and now, right now, I'm in it, you know, and you have to accept that in the now. So, anyway, that would be my response. Now, I do want to thank all the people who are in the chat room today. I know that they can't really respond because, just a reminder to people who have join the chat, that the way to be able to type questions is to actually get a Blog Talk Radio login. You don't have to host a radio show or anything like that to get a Blog Talk Radio login. It's pretty innocuous, I have found. I've had one for a long time before I ever had a show. And what that does is allows you to talk in the chat rooms when you go into a show. But even so, I just wanted to note that I welcome those people who have been here, and we've had some people coming in and out through the show, and it's one of the reasons I'm letting it go the full time span, because I appreciate that participation. And we've got 10 minutes left, so we're not going to be here much longer. But Sue, since we don't have a lot of time left, we should probably start wrapping this up. And, you know, what have we, you know, I found this conversation today to be great. I think that we need more conversations like this. Actually, I would love to have someone in here who really is, you know, maybe someone who feels that they're a Christian without questions, you know, although I pretty much most people have some questions, whether they express it or not, I think. But, you know, someone who, you know, wants to give an alternative point of view. And over time, I hope to have, you know, multiple perspectives. But, you know, I just wanted to say that I think this is the kind of conversation that is so important in this world so that we can begin to understand one another from multiple perspectives and ask each other questions about, you know, where we're at in our spiritual journeys.
Well, I agree with you, and I agree from a Christian perspective, too, in that I feel like the churches are moving towards some kind of shift as well, and that it's something that I'm not looking at with fear. I'm looking at it with a great deal of anticipation in the sense that it needs to happen, because they have allowed themselves to become too isolated and too much of a sense of we're not part of the world or the people in the world. We're separate. We're the only ones doing it right, and everyone else is motivated by evil forces, and that can't go on. And there's an awful lot of people within the church that feel the way I do, that are exploring these things, but as I say, they don't necessarily feel like they can talk about it within the borders of a church. So I think more of these conversations need to happen, but most of all that they need to happen without fear, which is why I like the name of your show so much, you know, because if we truly trust that God or the universe or the divine or whatever the source, whatever you want to call it, is within us all, is surrounding us all, and is love, complete love.
Unconditional love.
Thank you. Unconditional. Unconditional love. Then we shouldn't be afraid to ask questions that are honest. Not, you know, I am not asking the questions I'm asking because I desire to live any other way, because I desire to rebel in any way. It's because I have a sincere desire to know the heart of God. And more people, I think, are going to be stepping out and asking these questions. And the more we can dialogue and learn from each other, the more chance that we have to create a future in which spiritual exploration is encouraged, and where there will be less infighting between denominations and between spiritual people and science, which that is already starting to happen. I think there's less hostility there than there used to be. There's more of sense in science that there is a spiritual dimension to the things that they are studying, and there's a sense within spiritual people that learning all that we can about the nuts and bolts of how things work illuminates our spiritual walk. It doesn't threaten it. So let's talk more.
I look forward. I mean, I know this. We will have an opportunity to talk more, and you know, I'm still figuring out the future schedule for this show. But you know, I know that this is just the second of many conversations that we no doubt will have. And over time, I would love to get people in person together from different perspectives as well to talk about different points of view on these things. And something you brought up, and I'm keeping an eye on the time here, got 6 minutes left, is we have to stop demonizing other people. Oh, that is such an important point. Something that when you equate someone's behavior to being controlled by something, now again, we're not going to get into demon possession here with 6 minutes left, but the whole idea that there's a whole giant segment of the earth that is controlled, even unknowingly, you know, a different kind of unconsciousness from this perspective, that you are controlled by a supernatural entity. And what that does And, you know, I don't know everything about the Inquisition. What you raised was really interesting, that they thought they were freeing the person or whatever. I didn't know that. But certainly the torture was not such a good thing. But you have to wonder if they didn't, if you dehumanize the person and view this person as an object being directed by Satan, that causes a lot of nasty things to happen in the world. And it's not just isolated to Christianity. I mean, any spiritual belief that takes away a person's humanity. I mean, look at what happened even in the Holocaust. You know, the people were dehumanized. Slavery, same thing. You know, not here we're not even attributing it to some supernatural thing. I mean, just by the nature of someone's belief about someone else, you're dehumanizing that person, and it is then that really dark, cruel things occur in the world, because cruelty occurs when you don't see that person in the same way as you see your child or you see, you know, someone you love. Because if you could see that person that you think is your enemy, what does it mean to love your enemies, as someone you personally love? If you could see that, truly see that, you could not be cruel. And if you were acting out of love, I mean, if you were a person who was felt that you had good intentions, these horrible things that happen in the world wouldn't happen. You know, like the old song, I hope the Russians love their children too, kind of thing. Why is that meaningful?
Great songwriter.
They're protecting their children. Let's hope they love all the children of the earth. I mean, that was a different time. But let's hope we all love all the children. I mean, President Obama said something so powerful at that memorial service in Tucson, and he didn't exactly relate it to this, but it does relate in the sense of, you know, let's live up to the expectations of our children. Well, let's express ourselves in the world out of love for all the children of the world, not just, you know, our society or anyone, you know. And let's, and you can take that a step higher and say, we are all children of God, and see it there.
Well, you'd have to, because I don't have any children, so I don't have to act good.
No, that's okay. I'm sure you love children even so. You know, I mean, you don't have to have children to see this. So anyway, we are running out of time, and so I wanted to thank you so much, Sue, for being here. And I know we will be continuing these conversations in other ways. I envision all kinds of things that could occur. You know, and we both have faith and trust in our Creator, and we know that whatever is created through our being here and through others who I know are going to participate in this, it's all truly out of service to our Creator, and service to the love in this world that, you know, we know exists, and we both know it in our own way. So thank you, Sue, and thank you, listeners. And this show will be here again next week. Not sure yet what the topic will be. I have a potential guest coming on, but we will just keep an eye on the schedule. And once again, let's all come away from this show just focused on that love that I know is universal, and that I'm sure that everyone listening is connected in one way or another. It's not possible to be totally disconnected and be listening to this show. I know that there are people who can feel this, and we feel it to different degrees. So let's express that in every moment. Do you have anything more to say, Sue, in closing?
No, I think you've covered it. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much. And I will see you all next week.